Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi. Shavuos Daf Chaf Zayin. We begin at the top at the Mishnah. Nishba Lavatel Es HaMitzvah. A fellow swears to oppose a mitzvah. I will not wear tefillin. I will not eat matzah or shake a lulav. V'loy bitul. And he failed to keep his word. He did fulfill the mitzvah. He ate his matzah, shook his lulav, or put on his tefillin. Is he liable on account of breaking his promise? The answer is no. Potter, he's exempt, because this type of oath that negates a mitzvah is null and void. What if it's in support of a mitzvah? L'kayim, I promised to eat matzah, to do a mitzvah. Well, l'kayim, and he did not keep his word. So he missed the mitzvah, but is it considered breakage of a promise? Is he chayev karban, potter? Once again, he's exempt. As we're going to see in the Gemara, any sort of oath which relates to a mitzvah activity, either in support of the mitzvah or in opposition of a mitzvah, is null and void. Because in effect, at least on this second note, in support of a mitzvah, you would think perhaps the oath, the shvuah, has validity. Shahaya Badin, there would be reason to say Sheikhaiv, he's obligated to keep his oath and liable if he negates it. Why? Kedivrei, in accordance with the words of Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, which are Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. Look, Ma'im Harashos. If certainly a neutral activity, She'enoi Mujba Alav Mehar Sinai, on which he has no obligation, no prior commitment from the time of Sinai. You can choose to do, you can choose not to do. But if he makes a shvua on it, I'm going to toss that stone into the river, he has to keep his word. Harehu chayev alav. Certainly, you would think that a mitzvah, a positive commandment, to which he is already previously bound from the time of Har Sinai, mitzvah shehu mushba alehem Har Sinai, don't you think that a shvua to that effect, an oath in support of that mitzvah, which reinforces that obligation, wouldn't you think he's liable for that? So at least in a positive sense, when the shvua is l'kayim as a mitzvah, it should have validity. Amar Loi, the Rabbanan responded, you have a point, however, we know that both sides must be applicable, meaning a shvua must have potential for positive and for negative, as we learned yesterday. Lahara Eilahetiv, right? As opposed to a mitzvah-related shvua, which even according to you, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, will only have a positive manifestation, so it doesn't work. Amar Loi Loi, no. Ima Marta b'shvuas harishus, certainly by an oath relating to neutral activities, shekein asa b'alav kehein, there is a no potential, a yes potential. So it has the full equation. Toimar b'shvuas mitzvah, as opposed to a mitzvah-related oath, shelo yasa b'alav kehein. We don't equate the no to the yes. When it's in opposition, it has no validity. Hence, you can't have a shvuah even in support of a mitzvah. Sheim nishba levatav lebitel pata, as we said earlier. If he swears against a mitzvah, it's not valid. Hence, there's no shvuas bitoy with relation to mitzvahs. So, in fact, how do we know that a shvua which negates a mitzvah is not valid? Tanu Rabban, we have a brisa. Yochal nishba levatav sa mitzvah. What if a shvua is in opposition to a mitzvah? V'lo bitul, and he did not keep his word. Perhaps he's liable, he chayev. Does the shvuah take effect? No, Tamar Leimar, the Pasuk says, Lahara Eilahetiv. Two examples of shvuah. Lahara, to do bad, to fast, Eilahetiv, or to do good, to eat. The Torah pairs them together to teach us that they're two sides of the same coin. They're comparable to each other. They're meant to match each other, as we're going to see later on in the Brayse. Hence, we learn that Mahatava Rishus Avharo Rishus, just like the good deed relates to neutral activities, as we're going to see soon. If that is so, then the bad side as well, Avharo, is limited to Rishus activities, as opposed to a Shvuah, which is in opposition to a mitzvah. Oitzi nishba levatal sa mitzvah lebitel shehu pater. If the shvuah is against the mitzvah, he's pater for that shvuah. What about in a positive sense, in support of a mitzvah? Yochel nishba lekayimah sa mitzvah lo kiyem sheyechayev. What about a shvuah which is in support of doing a mitzvah? If he doesn't keep his word there, is he chayev? No. Talmud Lomer once again. Lahara oy lehetiv. The pasuk pairs it together, the bad and the good. And we compare the good to the bad this time. A minute ago we compared the bad to the good. Now we're comparing the good to the bad. Lahara oy lehetiv, mahara rishus, just like on the bad side. It's speaking about rishus, neutral stuff. Afa tava rishus, likewise, on the positive side. It's limited to rishus. Soon the Gemara will clarify exactly how we got to this conclusion. In any case, Oitzi nishba l'kayim esamitzvah l'kiyem shu pater. This leads us to the conclusion that a shvua, which is in support of a mitzvah, does not take effect. Okay, next point. Yochel nishba l'hara la'atzmai l'hara yochel pater. What if a fellow makes a shvua to harm himself, to cut himself, and doesn't keep it? Breaks his promise. Is he potter? No. He's liable. Talmud Lomer lahara lehetiv. Mahatava rishus afaro rishus. Just like hatava means something which is within his ability to accomplish. Hara, on the negative side as well, it's something which is within his ability to do, including harming himself. And Taisa says, we're going like the Shita, that doing so does not involve an isur. Okay. So certainly we have covered a fellow who promised to harm himself, did not keep it, he's chayiv, because that's something that he can do. He's in control of him, of his own body. What if he's now turning against others? I promised to attack somebody else. That's an isser, you can't do that. If he doesn't keep his promise there, is he chayiv? No, that's exempt. Lahara ilahitiv. Once again, it's a full package, good and bad, which means to say, we compare one to the other. Mahatava rishus, afharo rishus. Just like doing a good deed is within your control, whether it pertains to yourself or to others, right? Likewise, when the Torah speaks about something negative, it's strictly something which you have the ability to do, which is allowable. Oitzi nishba l'har l'achem, as opposed to ishvua, to attack somebody else. L'ihara, even if he didn't keep that promise, he's not chayiv. Shein harushus b'yadai. Because that's something that he has no permission to do. Something which is asur to do. Right? We all know the pasuk, we learned it in Maseches Makis. Lo Yosef lahakoisai, we warn the shliach of the bez, not you dare add another lash to the 39, right? And this pertains to anybody, you cannot hit somebody. So that's out. What about if he promises to give somebody a gift, do something good to somebody? Menayin l'rabbis hatavas achirim. So even though you can't apply it in a bad sense, you can't attack somebody, but perhaps if he commits to do good to somebody, so although it has no negative version, it's limited to a positive version. But the extra word oy, it could have said lahara u lehetiv. Why the oy lehetiv? That's covering this type of oath where he promises to give somebody a gift. So again, although it doesn't have a potential negative side to it, I mean, you can't promise to hurt somebody, like we just said, but you can promise to give somebody and to be mitzvah to somebody, and that takes effect. What's an example? Ve'ezohi haruah sacher, an example of doing bad to somebody else. Ake es pleni, eftes moiche, I'll attack somebody, I'll break his moyach, his head. Okay. End of price. Let's go back for a second. The Brisa began with a discussion regarding a shvuah that pertains to a mitzvah activity. Whether it's to oppose a mitzvah, whether it's to reinforce a mitzvah, either way, it doesn't take effect. Asks the Gemara, "Umimai dekroy bedvar harushus ksivi." How do we know that the pasuk lahara ilahetiv? These pesukim are speaking strictly about neutral events. Dilma bedvar mitzvah ksivi. Perhaps they're speaking about mitzvah-related activities, meaning. We sort of established. Look, the Torah says lahara ilahetiv. It's comparable. The good is like the bad. The bad is must be in similar fashion to the good. So if one is strictly neutral related activities, the other one as well. How do we know that one is only neutral activities, and so the other? Who says? Says the Gemara leis hakadat, you can't. Suggest otherwise. Why? The Ba'inan Hatava Dumya Dahara. Vahara Dumya Hatava. Because as discussed, the Pasuk compares the two. It's one package. Lahara, to do bad. For instance, in the classic, your classic example would be fasting, withholding from food, and lahitav means to do good. Do something positive. To have a meal, to eat, right? And two things are meant to match. They're meant to feature the same, similar characteristics. The Be'in and Hatovya. The good deed has to be dumya, comparable, the hara, to the bad deed. Speaking about, you know, similar circumstances. And likewise, v'hara, the bad deed, dumya da hatava, must be similar in circumstance to the positive deed. The Akish Hara La'atava, because the Pasuk connects the two. Okay, so knowing that, let's figure this out. Ma Tava Eino B'Bitul Mitzvah. Lehetiv. Something positive. What's he promising to do? Let's look at the, you know, all types of eating, you know, experiences, food experiences. So we have many options. It could be eating something permissible, something which is a mitzvah, like chametz, like matzah on Pesach, right? So he promises to eat something. Eino bebitul mitzvah. It cannot relate to eating something which negates a mitzvah, like chametz on Pesach. You know why? That's not something positive. That's not hatava. He's not doing himself any good by eating chametz on Pesach. Clearly, hatava must relate to something positive like eating matzah on Pesach. Right? Okay, so that being the case, once we know that hatava cannot relate to negating a mitzvah, opposing a mitzvah, af hara, we assume likewise that the word hara, the negative experience, the withholding from food, the fasting experience is promising to do. Likewise, eino bebitul mitzvah. Clearly is not an activity which negates a mitzvah. It has to be similar to hatava, which is not bitul mitzvah, so hara as well. Must not involve canceling a mitzvah. Rather, when he's promising to withhold from food, it's something which doesn't negate a mitzvah. Like, he's going to fast, he's going to keep away from chametz on Pesach. Okay, so if that's the case, we have a problem. Haro gufo hatavahi. So now, this so-called bad experience, this negative experience, this fasting experience, ultimately, is really a good experience. withholding from chametz is the best thing he can do on Pesach. So why does the pasuk call it hara? We have a semantics issue now. Why are we labeling this experience bad if it's really good? Okay, so this won't work. Again, if we're speaking about mitzvah-related activities, and we have established that hatava cannot be speaking about bittul mitzvah, rather kiyum mitzvah, hara as well, it's not speaking about going against the mitzvah, rather it's withholding from something forbidden like chametz on Pesach, so ultimately it's not, it shouldn't be labeled as bad. It's not at all a negative experience, it should be called good. And likewise, we go the other way. After we connected hara to hatava, to establish that hara, the negative incident described in the pasuk, must match circumstantially the features in the hatava experience. Now we're going to go the other way, because the pasuk connects them both ways. Va'akish hatava lahara will connect the hatava to the hara. So the starting point now will be hara, the bad experience. Ma hara eino b'kiyum mitzvah. Just as hara, the negative experience, the fasting experience, cannot relate to fasting in a way which fulfills a mitzvah, such as abstaining from chametz on Pesach, because that can't be. That would not be considered negative. That would not be labeled as hara. Apparently, he's fasting, he's withholding from something he should be eating, like matzah on Pesach. So hara is not related to reinforcement, to the fulfillment of a mitzvah. Likewise, on the flip side, af hatava, the positive experience, eino mekiyum mitzvah, is also not related to a fulfillment of a mitzvah. Hatava means to eat. It's not related to eating something which is deemed a fulfillment of a mitzvah. For instance, eating matzah on Pesach. Right? Because it has to be comparable to hara, which we've just proven doesn't relate to kiyum mitzvah. So apparently, hatava, the eating experience, is something other than kiyum mitzvah. Rather, it's bittul mitzvah, like eating chametz on Pesach. Fine, but then the question is, why do we call it hatava? It's not at all something positive for him. It's mislabeled. Hatava gufa, this so-called good experience, hara'ahi, is in essence a negative experience. So, bottom line is, the psukim cannot relate to mitzvah-related experiences, negating mitzvahs, fulfilling mitzvahs, eating, fasting in ways which affect mitzvahs. Because then, inevitably, it's not gonna, the labeling will not match the activities. It's going to be mislabeled. Hence, we conclude the psukim don't discuss mitzvahs. Rather, we're speaking about neutral activities. Eating, abstaining from foods which don't relate to mitzvahs. Well, says the Gemara, why is that any better? Going along the same, you know, track that lahara ilahetiv is sort of one equation. The positive experience, the negative experience have to relate to each other, have to match each other to a certain extent. We're going to run into confusion again with respect to mislabeling. Yachiv, that's the case with Rosh Hashanami, Lemishkar Asla. Even with respect to neutral eating or fasting experiences, it's just not going to work out, Rashi explains for us as follows. Lahara ilahetiv. So if lahara needs to be comparable to lahetiv, lahetiv means he promises to eat something. Now what? What's he eating? It can be something which is beneficial to his health, something detrimental to his health. Now clearly, lahetiv is something which is beneficial to his health. It can't be otherwise. It can't be something which harms him. That would not be considered hatava. It's not a positive experience. So clearly it's something which is good for him. Likewise, lahara, withholding, fasting, is also going to produce a positive health effect. If it has to be comparable to lehitiv. So what's he withholding from? Things which are harmful to his health. Well, then the question is, why are you labeling it harra? It's not at all negative. It's withholding from fats, and it's the greatest thing he can do for himself. That's really hatava. So it's what's labeled. Same thing in the reverse. We have to compare hatava to harra. Right? Harra means he's going to fast, withhold from food. Now, for calling it bad, harra, apparently he's withholding from something which is beneficial to his health. Otherwise, it would not be considered a negative experience. He's swearing to eat something which is really good for him. Likewise, hatava, which is comparable to hatava, which is itahara, which is connected, has to have similar features, must be speaking about the same type of case, where he's promising to, yes, eat something which is detrimental to his health. Okay, but then you're mislabeling the experience. Why are you calling it hatava? Call it hara. So basically, we end up with the same confusion. Whether we're speaking about mitzvah-related activities or neutral activities. So there goes our whole point. There goes the whole basis, the whole source. That a shvua, which is pro or negative, with respect to a mitzvah, has no validity. Where do you find that in the pasuk? How do you know? That the pasuk is not speaking about mitzvah-related activities. Okay, says the Gemara, Ella, let's switch tracks. We recall that a minute ago, we learned that a shvua, which relates to other people, a promise to give somebody a gift, takes effect. How do we know? Oy, right? The extra word, oy lehitiv. So to attack somebody, that's off the charts. That doesn't mean anything. That's not binding, right? But to do something good to somebody, that is binding. Says the Gemara, that's going to prove for us that the shvois are strictly relating to neutral activities. Elam the istrich oy l'rabbis atavas hachem. The fact that we need the word oy to expand, to extend, to cover a promise with respect to gifting others, doing a good deed to others, shmamanu b'dvar harishus ksivi. That in itself proves to us the nature of the shvois that we're speaking of, that is limited to neutral activities. You know why? Because otherwise, yisak gadaitach b'dvar mitzvah ksivi, if in fact a mitzvah-related shvua has effect, so basically, if you promise to attack somebody, which is obviously an isur, nevertheless, the shvua is binding. You have to follow through. Otherwise, you're liable to a breakage of that shvua. So then, hashto haras acher misrabi. If a shvua with respect to harming somebody is covered, is valid, hatavas acher miboya, why does the pasuk have to go out of its way with the extra word, oy, to teach us that promising to do a good deed for somebody else is binding? Well, obviously, if even attacking somebody has validity, certainly, right? So that in itself teaches us, right? Apparently, no, a shvua which relates to a mitzvah has no validity. For instance, promising to attack somebody means nothing. And that's why Torah has to go out of its way and say, look, even though in a negative sense it doesn't work, but in a positive sense, you promise to give somebody a gift, that works. Okay, so this is the first proof, first of two, that a shvua against a mitzvah does not work. What do you mean? The oy? That's not extra, that's needed for something else. To separate the two examples in the Torah, lahara oy lehetiv. Without the oy, I would think the shvua must have both sides to it. You have to make a shvua to do something good, and do something bad for it to have an effect. So the word oy separates them. One is enough to be considered a shvua. Says the Gemara, l'chalek le'tzarek ro. No, we don't need the word oy to be mechalek Because whenever we have two items mentioned side by side, like lahara ulaheta, without the oy, you would still know it's separate. Hanichal Rabbi Yonasan. That's good according to Rabbi Yonasan, who learns psukim like that. El Rabbi Yashia, according to him, who says that without the oy, you pair it together, you connect it. Michael and Mamer, then we're stuck. We have no extra word oy. It's needed for the plain definition of the pasuk. The Sandy, where do we find this machlekes? Ishar sheri kalalos oves in my person curses father and mother. Now, does that mean he had to curse them together? Only el ovev imoy. Perhaps only if he curses father and mother is he liable. What about one and not the other? Ovev v'lay imoy or imoy v'lay ovev minayin. How do we know he's chayv tamuleimar? The pasuk concludes with the words ovev imoy kileil. Here the word kileil is next to imoy, and in the previous phrase, in the beginning of the pasuk, it places the word yikalel near the father. So we learn that either way, aviv kileil or imay kileil, he's chayev. Div Rabbi Yashia. So according to him, if not for this, you know, pasuk pointing it out for us, you would think that they go together as a pair. Rabbi Yonasan Omer, it's unnecessary. Mashmash neim kehechad, mashmash echad b'fnei atzmoy. When the pasuk speaks about two items, or two people, or two, it can be together, it can be separate. Unless the Torah clearly says it's together, like by kelayim it says yachtov. Otherwise, each one, you know, stands independent of the other. So, bottom line, according to Rabbi Yashia, lahara oy lahetiv, oy is not extra, oy is needed to separate lahara from lahetiv. Each one on its own is a shvu. I feel the Rabbi Yashia. You're right. According to Rabbi Yashia, we're going to have to find an alternate source. The shvua, a mitzvah-related shvua, has no effect. So the halacha can go according to him as well. However, Rasavala Rabbi Akiva, he's going to follow Rabbi Akiva's shita, the darash ribuyi miyute, who applies the ribuyi miyut method to the psukim, as we discussed yesterday. Right? There's a inclusive term, all types of shvuas. There's a limiting term, only a certain kind of shvois work, and then we have another inclusionary term, and ultimately we have to exclude something. Otherwise, why would the Torah go through that effort to give us the specifics, the miut? So something has to be excluded, some type of shvua, some type of, you know, category of oaths have no effect. So certainly if the psukim speak about neutral experiences. Mimai dvar mitzvah. So what's to be accepted? What's to be pushed aside? A mitzvah-related shvu. Because that's the most likely candidate for miut. It's going against a mitzvah. It's going, right? Eli yamas dvar mitzvah ksiv. However, if you're going to suggest to me that, in fact, shvuos apply to mitzvahs as well. So what's the pasuk exempting? What's the pasuk ruling out? Something has to be nismait. So apparently the dvar mitzvah, right, negating a mitzvah, is a prime candidate for that, because you're already committed to it, you're bound by it. And Rashi points out, well, if we establish that going against a mitzvah doesn't work, so likewise, even reinforcing a mitzvah. Because as we learned in the Mishnah, the Shvua must have potential for both positive and negative. Amar Rav Yehuda ben Seira, Mayim HaRashus, he disagrees. He says, with respect to opposing a mitzvah, fine. That doesn't count, but a Shvua in support of mitzvah works. It even works on neutral activities. Wouldn't you think it works to reinforce a mitzvah? However, Rabbanan respond by saying, if it doesn't work in the negative, it doesn't take off. A shvuas bitui must have potential for both aspects, positive and negative. That's a solid argument. Rabbanon shapir ka'amrilei. Little bit different with Sarah. Didn't they respond pretty strongly? Meaning, how is he going to respond to this position? It doesn't have both sides to it. Answers the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda ben Misera Amalach, he'll respond to you, look, this is not the only example of a one-sided shvua. If you recall, a minute ago we discussed a shvua which relates to others. It only has a positive potential to it. You can't attack somebody. You can give him something if you want. So doesn't that prove that even a one-sided shvuah has validity? Atu ha'tavas achirim, with respect to doing a good deed to others. Lav afagav delesei b'chlal ha'ra'as achirim. Wouldn't you agree with me that despite not having a negative manifestation, you can't promise to attack somebody. Still, in a positive tone, it works. V'Rabbi Rachmana, Torah adds it. Hachanam here as well, b'ki mitzvah, with respect to doing a mitzvah. Afagav delesei b'chlal mitzvah, even though I agree with you. The shvua against the mitzvah has no, but at least in a positive sense, Rabbi Rachmana, Torah would include it. Rabban, and they respond, no, you can't compare. Hasam isei b'lei etiv. Regarding others, you're right. You can't attack somebody. But you can promise to withhold something good from somebody. That's also a manifestation of a negative promise. But over here by a mitzvah, you cannot swear that you will passively withhold from fulfilling a mitzvah, like not eating matzah on Pesach. You can't do that, because that's going against a mitzvah. So here, there is no, by mitzvah, there is no negative aspect at all that has validity. In which case, any mitzvah-related Shvuah has no impact at all. Okay, so in a nutshell, we learned that a shvuah which negates a mitzvah has no validity. We have an option of two sources. Either the word oy, which covers doing a good deed to others, which serves to prove this point. Apparently, a mitzvah-related shvuah does not take effect, because if it does, and if you promise to harm somebody, it's binding, and certainly to do good to others. Apparently, no. Anything which negates a mitzvah is null and void. Hence, the Torah had to add this point that, well, if you promise to give somebody something, that does take effect. The other source was the miut, Rabbi Akiva, which is memayit var mitzvah. Now, what about reinforcing a mitzvah? What about a shvuah l'kayim as a mitzvah? We have machlekes. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira holds it's binding. Rabbana say no, because it doesn't have a negative aspect. It doesn't have a positive aspect as well. Continues the Mishnah. Shvuah shaloi eichal kikerzu. I promise not to eat this loaf of bread. So even a bit of that loaf, even a kazayis, I will not have an achila from this loaf. He repeats it again and again. Shvuah shaloi eichlena. I will not have the entire loaf. This is a little bit of a different type of an expression, because the second shvuah relates to the entire unit. Until he gets to the last crumb, he hasn't really violated that second shvuah. And then he repeats again, shvuah shelo yechlena. So it's a triple shvuah. Va'achlani ate it. Ein achai v'la'achas. It carries only one chiyuv. As we discussed many times, she'ein shvuah chala al shvuah, in Rashi's words, you cannot double up shvuah. Zui shvuah spitoi. This is your classic shvuah spitoi. Shechayov nas doin a malkus, for which if a person violates willingly, he gets malkus. Val shegigas a carbon el biyared, but unintentionally bring a carbon el biyared. What is a shvuah shav? That's the blatantly false oath, promising this pillar of stone is really gold. Shvuah in vain has a little bit of a different consequence. Chayavan al zdoin ha-makis. B'mezit, there's makis. Al shigigosa, however, there's no carbon, he's potter. Lo mili lemisni shvuah shalai eichal, shvuah shalai eichlena. What's the point of repeating his double oath in different terms? Why are we changing his language? First, shalai eichal, and then shalai eichlena. You could have made the same point by just repeating the same exact lashon twice. And the point of the Mishnah is to teach us a very interesting lesson. Only in this type of format doesn't it work. Only in this type of repetition do we not double it up. Time of the Amar Shalai Eichal, because he began with Shalai Eichal. I will not partake even a kazayis of this bread. V'hada amar shlo yechlenu. And then he came back and said, I'm not going to eat the entire bread. Over here. D'lo mechayev alachad. If he eats the bread, he only is chayev once. Why? Because the first shvua already affected the entire loaf. The whole thing became usur on account of the first shvua. So the second one is just merely a redundancy. Aval amar shlo yechlenu. What if he reverses the format? First expression is, I will not have the entire loaf. So, he's only chayev for the entire loaf, right? If he eats 90%, he hasn't really violated his oath. But now he added and says, well, I'm not going to have anything. Even a little bit, even a kazayis. In this case, if he ate the entire loaf, mechayev tarti is chayev twice. Why? Because when he ate part of it, he has broken his second promise, which was shelo eichel, to keep away even from part. But he hasn't yet triggered the first oath, which only gets activated when he finishes the entire thing. So here he's chayev two, because each one relates to a different aspect of his experience. Could the Rav, as Rav explained, that in fact these are two distinct forms of expression with different effects. Damar Rav, shvur shlo eichal kikar zu. I promise not to eat this kikar. Shlo eichal means I will not eat any part of the kikar. Kivan she'ochal men kezayis chayiv. He ate one kezayis, he's chayiv. However, shlo eichlen, no. I will not have the entire loaf. In this case, he's not chayv asher yichles kula until he finishes the entire loaf. So that explains the previous halacha. But in the Mishnah, we have actually a fellow who repeated himself three times. One, and again, and again. What's the point of repeating the same point so many times? To teach us the basic halacha that one shvua cannot land on a previous shvua. Twice is enough to teach us that point. Why repeat it yet again? Shvur shalo yechlenu, v'achla nechayv la'achas. Hasulamali, why repeat it yet again? What's the point of three times? Says the one, Kamashmon, there's an additional point here. To teach us chayuvahu delek. At this point, there's no liability on anything past the first oath. Okay, but hashvur ikav, you should know that the second and third oaths still exist. They exist in potential. They're like hovering on a holding pattern over the runway. There's nowhere to land. Parking space has been filled by the first shvua, but we're still here in potential. In fact, the Mishkachas Ravcha, if the later oaths discover there's somewhere to land, chayla, they land. So what does this pertain to? I mean, it's not very practical. The parking spot's filled up. The first shvua, as long as it's here, it preempts the subsequent shvuas from landing. The answer is, look at the Rav, as Rav explains. I'm a Rav. Suppose he goes to the Chacham and he undoes, he regrets having made that first oath, and he eradicates it, uproots it retroactively. Also, Shnia Tachtir. So the second one now lands. And he's also to eat the loaf of bread on account of the second shvuah. So true for the time being, anything past the first oath is sort of a fifth wheel. But it still has potential. It can still be activated in the event that the earlier shvuah falls by the wayside. And that's what the Mishnah is teaching us by saying it again and again, to tell us that all these additional oaths are still there in potential. Leimam Se'ele, perhaps we can prove and support this point of Rabba from a halacha in Maseches Nazir. Mishanadar Beis Nazirus. A fellow declared himself as a Nazir once, and then he said it again. So what he should really do is keep 30 days, finish the first process, and then do it again for the second commitment. But for the time being, you can't have a double and a zero is taking place simultaneously, right? Umana Rishoina, Vifrashalea Karbon. So he counted the first 30 days, brought a karbon, right? V'achakach nishal rishon, and then he regretted it. He says, you know, I can't afford twice the process of karbon. So he goes to the bezin and he regrets and he undoes. He does a taras nedarim on the first commitment. What happens to that 30-day experience? Does it just dissipate? Is it wasted effort? No. Because he's still committed to the second nazirus. And therefore, you can take those 30 days and now reapply them, relabel them, transfer them, so to speak, to the second account. They count as fulfillment of the second commitment. Also, l'shnia b'rishayna. So the second nazirus has now been accounted for, been completed, been observed through those 30 days, which were really meant for the first nazirus. How does that work? Clearly says the Gemara that the second Nazirus, although it's not yet been activated during the first 30 days, but it's here in potential, waiting to be triggered. And if, for whatever reason, the first Nazirus vacates the area, the second one could just land in its place. Similar to what we're saying by Shvua. How can you compare the two contexts? Hasam Nazirus Mia Isa. By the Nazirus, the second commitment is valid. In fact, he has to. The Chimana L'Rishoina, everything going well after he finishes the first count, when he's done 30, Boilu Mahada Mimna L'Shni, has to go through another count for the second commitment. B'loi Sheila, unless he does Sheila, right? But all going well, there's no contradiction between the first 30 and the second 30. He would have to keep them, subsequent to each other. Over there, the second Nazirus is active. It's here. It's not even triggered, not even started until time comes. So, fine, if I vacate the area and I undo the first one, certainly the second Nazirus, which I'm obligated to do from day one, can take the place of the first one. But over here, by the Shvua, Hacha Shvua, Shnir Me'isa Klal, but by the double Shvua, the second one has no meaning. Ein Shavua Chala Al Shavua. You see, Nazirus, be my guest, do 30 and another 30, be another for the rest of your life. It's not a contradiction. So in this case, it happens to be that I can bunch it up and bring the second Shavua into the, to fill the space, the vacuum, left behind by the first Nazirus, which left the area. That's fine. But by the double and triple Shavua, look, once I promise not to eat this loaf, it's done. I can't add another layer of Shavua. You can't say, well, the second one is here in potential and can land later. It's a non-starter. It's not like it's hovering over the runway. It never took off. So you can't really prove anything from Nazirus to Shavua. But in any case, Rava did teach us that point. Even by a double Shavua, the subsequent Shavuos are there in potential, waiting to land when the space becomes available. Okay, let's just recap this piece. We have a Mishnah with a triple Shvua. The only Chayav one. Shvua's Pitu has carbon and Malkus. Shvua's Shav has Malkus with no carbon. We know the difference between Shloi Eichel, which pertains even to Okazayis, Eloi Echel and Noah, it's the entire loaf of bread. And the Chiddush of Rava, that although the second Shvua is not really binding, has no liability, but it's potentially there and could be activated as soon as he finds some room. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rabbah.